And welcome to episode 65 of Coffee with the Coders. Thank you for dialing in, and special kudos to our insiders who dialed in early today. We have got some wonderful questions, and some of them are non-anonymous, so there's going to be a mugging today. Good looking for that. But let me start right here. This one's going to be anonymous because it was asked in a different platform, or they didn't want to use their name. And so we're speaking from the position of a medical practice or medical office. Can different specialties charge different prices within the same tax ID number?
Okay, yeah, you know, it's kind of challenging. I actually did quite a bit of research, or we did, and I would say I, but it's a team here, and looking at, you know, is that possible? Because there's so many practices that are multi-specialty out there. And so you think about, you know, maybe an orthopedic surgeon might charge a different rate for their evaluation and management service, and I'm making this up, this example, than an internal medicine doctor. So, and if they were in separate practices, you would see that happening because they would set their different rates. So, yes, they can. Now, I reached out to an attorney, and I reached out to a payer insider on this. Now, here's some of the backstory on that. Payer systems can be either very intelligent or they can be homegrown and not very savvy. The intelligent systems use the tax ID for billing and for the 1099. So that's exactly what it's used for, those tax ID numbers. Now, each individual provider gets their own NPI number, and billing and payment is associated to that NPI number. The individual mid-levels, they are associated to their supervising physicians, and claims are paid appropriately. Now, homegrown systems may not allow this level of claim granularity, and you know, things like our claims, like injury claims, payers may not be as savvy as, you know, the healthcare insurance companies. And so, if you're dealing with, you know, injury type claims, you might not be able to get that level of detail from the payer, and there might be challenges in getting those payments correct. But it might be just dropping it to paper and talking to the payer to get it done correctly. Now, each provider specialty absolutely can bill different rates, even if they're billing under the same tax ID number. Remember, payer systems may require that human intervention if the system is not set up to handle the differences, but that really is irrelevant. Now, you may have some arguments with those payers, whether it's a medical health insurance plan or those, you know, plans that pay for those injury claims like the auto accidents and workers' comp and all. So you may need some, you know, may need to do some hand-holding and really do some appeals or talk them through and maybe even need to argue getting that claim processed correctly or claim or claims. But, yes, they can.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so this one's also from a medical office. It's also anonymous. Can a PA or an NP be billed or bill out for assistant at surgery for a common procedure?
Okay, yeah. So when we read this question, we were trying to figure out exactly kind of what it meant. So we presumed that, and this, we've seen this in an audit investigation before, so let me say this. We presumed that you might want to use a mid-level, or the provider might want to use a mid-level provider to do simple common procedures, not something that is, you know, more complex that you would absolutely know needs an assistant surgeon. Assistant surgery, or assistants at surgery, NPs and PAs, first of all, can provide assistant at surgery services. However, when we think about, there is actually a list, most payers have a list, Medicare starting with the first one, of CPT codes that are allowed to report assistant at surgery modifiers with. So, for example, those common procedures like a colonoscopy, for example, that one's not on the list. You wouldn't bill for a nurse practitioner or a PA or a medical doctor even to perform assistant at surgery for colonoscopy. That would be highly, highly, highly unusual. So if you're talking about common procedures that are complex, yes, they could. But I would refer back to either the Medicare list or the payer list to find out if you can actually report the particular procedure that you're performing with an assistant surgeon. Because, again, they don't all, and if you want to know where to find that on the Medicare, you just go to the physician fee schedule, and there's a physician fee schedule lookup out on CMS. It's very easy. You just ask for all data points, which is, I think, the very first question on that page. And when you get the response to the CPT code that you're searching for, you can scroll over to the right and look at all the different modifiers that are appropriate with it. And you would look under, you know, AS for the modifier for the assistant surgeon performed by a mid-level. Okay, so go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, so now for this question, this is from April, and it looks like to me that April is in an inpatient rehab. Okay, and here's her question. When IGC is debility, after a patient has a surgery, is a primary or principal diagnosis for UB debility or aftercare? So, for example, we've got IGC of 16 debility. The etiologic is thyroid lymphoma, stage 2, diffuse large B-cell lymphoma, DLBCL, status post thyroidectomy for debulking, status post left neck dissection. Comorbidities are generalized weakness, patient for admission to acute IP rehab because of optimal recovery for acute functional deficits due to debility is likely to occur with multidisciplinary rehab team. Should the principal diagnosis be debility or aftercare following surgery for neoplasm? I've seen similar charts that only document debility as IGC with functional decline in the notes and patient in after a surgery for related diagnosis as etiology. And so I'm wondering if aftercare is the principle for UB over debility in those situations.
Okay, excellent question. Thank you, April, because this is the kind of stuff that we address in the IRF Pro Labs. So I wanted to bring that to your attention because we get into the nitty-gritty and we use actual case studies. We have, you know, multiple charts that we go through in detail, breaking them apart and trying to figure out, okay, how do we code this? And so the first thing I need to say for those of you who are not familiar with IRF coding is there are two different documents. There's the IRF PI that has to be, you know, completed, and there is the UB04 claim form. They are both completed using different rules when it comes to diagnosis selection. So the IGC that April spoke about is 16, which means that is just the generalized debility. That means the patient is overall generalized weakness and debility, and that whatever the cause was didn't fit into another impairment group category. Those other categories include things like stroke, orthopedic, if it was an orthopedic issue, if it was a spinal cord issue, if it was an amputation of, you know, certain amputations. If it didn't fit in one of those other categories, we tend to put it in debility if the patient's reason for admission is overall generalized weakness. So you have to look at that, because if it's not, we have another option. Now, what I did with this particular question is I actually came up with a logic tree for it. It doesn't work in 100% of the cases, but we've been using it, and we teach it in the IRF Pro Labs, and, you know, I teach it anytime I'm in an inpatient rehab facility talking about how to code for the UB04. But let's talk first about what is the principal diagnosis. The principal diagnosis on the UB04 is the chief reason for occasioning the admission determined after careful study. On the IRF PI, the etiologic is the diagnosis that represents the underlying reason for the impairment. So for your example, or let me give you a different example first, let's say, but for some others on the call, just kind of get it set. On the IRF PI, if the patient comes in to rehab for a stroke, they had a stroke, they were in the acute side, and they're coming over to rehab now, the stroke impairment group, a stroke IGC, would be matched best with an acute stroke, which would be the etiologic diagnosis on the IRF PI. On the UB04 claim form, the reason they're going to rehab is their, you know, the chief reason for occasion at admission is the residual associated to the stroke. So that would be maybe the hemiplegia would be the I-69 code, would be the UB04 principal diagnosis. So you see there's different rules there. Now, it's a little confusing, but let's look at the scenario. Debility, when you have a debility case, that's where it gets the most confusing. You need to ask yourself a few questions. Now, we both agree, based on your statement, that the etiologic diagnosis is thyroid lymphoma, stage 2 diffuse large B-cell lymphoma. However, the UB04, because the condition no longer exists and you have a surgery performed for it to get it out, the principal diagnosis on the UB04 would be the aftercare following the surgery for the neoplasm. The debility is a result of the surgery, but the reason that they're going to rehab is the aftercare following the surgery for neoplasm, which that was a good question you asked. So let me talk about the logic tree. Now, to determine the UB04 principal diagnosis for rehab encounters, I ask a few questions, and this is kind of how my logic tree goes. The first question is, I ask, does the condition still exist? So talking about the thyroid lymphoma, we say, does it still exist? If the answer is yes, you're going to code it, okay? And that's going to be the principle when the patient goes to rehab. If the answer is no, which in this case, the thyroid lymphoma was removed, you're going to ask, did surgery repair it? If the answer is yes, you're going to code the aftercare, or you may code the appropriate injury code with the appropriate seventh character. Typically, like you're talking about like a fracture, and you're going to report the seventh character of D, whereas on the IRF-PI, that seventh character for the EDO is going to be an A. Now, if no, that means the surgery didn't repair it, then you're going to code the residual or symptom. So does it exist? If it exists, code it. If it doesn't, ask, you know, did the surgery repair it? If yes, code the aftercare or the injury code. If no, code the residual or symptom. That is the only time you're going to report that debility as the principal diagnosis. Now, remember, this doesn't work 100% of the time, but it does work most of the time. This is the kind of thing, again, we teach at IRF Pro Lab. We're actively looking for facilities, as we mentioned on the front end, to host an IRF Pro Lab. That means that you, if your facility is interested, you're going to get free attendance for staff. Just guys, revenue warriors on the call today, head on over to your private Facebook page. Pam's going to post this logic tree for you. You get it for free. So revenue warriors get lots of special benefits and get access to us as consultants. So that logic tree will be posted on Revenue Warriors. We will open, if you are not a member, go on over to the AQIQ page and sign up, and that's AQIQ.com, not the Facebook page, and sign up to be on the wait list, because that membership will be opening soon because you get lots of good stuff. So, Pam, I think I went really long-winded today.
Oh, well, it was just such fun. I enjoyed that greatly. And I love how you explained that very well. I think I'm looking at the logic tree that I just picked up, and I'll be posting that pretty quickly in the Revenue Warriors private page. So for all you Revenue Warriors out there, just go over there and get you a copy. And thank you so much. So now the last thing I have to do, besides remind you that we got this webinar coming up next Thursday, and the next session of Coffee with the Coder is 2 weeks from today on the 17th, but I also need to give a mug, because we had someone who, one of these questions is non-anonymous, and since there's only one, you get to win. I don't even have to share your possibility with anyone else. So April, you win. I'm going to reach out to you and see where to mail your mug. And please send us some more questions, because this is fun. We love sending out these Coffee with the Coder mugs and giving you an opportunity to do your selfie with the actual mug. And thanks for being here today. We just really appreciate your attendance and telling all your friends so that we can grow Coffee with the Coder. Join us again in 2 weeks.